This is 90.9 WBUR. Good morning, I'm Bob Oakes. A special state fund designed to save the Massachusetts horse racing industry has an unusual problem. It has too much money and not enough places to spend it. The situation has led to a turf war among owners of different breeds of racehorses over where the money should go and who best represents the future of this ailing industry. WBUR, in cooperation with the investigative news organization The Eye, has been examining the Massachusetts Racehorse Development Fund. This morning, WBUR senior reporter Bruce Gellerman has the first story in our two-part Bostonomics series, Trying to Win, But No Place to Show.
Back in the 1930s and 40s, horse racing, the sport of kings, reigned supreme in New England. In its heyday, there were 17 thoroughbred racetracks in the region. Bob Temple, a New England horse racing historian, says the four largest brought in huge crowds.
Just those four tracks outdrew the Red Sox, the Bruins, and the Celtics combined. And that's how big the sport was.
But times and tastes have changed. Today, horse racing in Massachusetts is an also-ran sport. There's only one racetrack in the state still running on a regular schedule, and it's not even for thoroughbreds. These days, Bob Temple says bettors prefer quick-paced casino action over the ponies.
It's a dying industry. In fact, you might even use the past tense. It's a dead industry. It's almost non-existent. Why support a dying industry?
For the past year, horse racing in the state has been on government life support. A special subsidy, known as the Racehorse Development Fund, is administered by the Massachusetts Gaming Commission. Stephen Crosby is chairman.
The legislature has made the decision multiple times that it is in the public interest to save the horse racing industry for all of its associated dimensions.
Those include jobs, saving open space, and family farms. 5 years ago, lawmakers created the Special Horse Fund when they approved casino gambling. Many considered it a sure bet because the horse fund had a key backer in House Speaker Robert DeLeo. The Democrats' district in Winthrop is adjacent to Suffolk Downs Racetrack, where DeLeo's father worked for decades. DeLeo declined our repeated request to comment for this story. The fund has turned out to be a winner, at least financially. So far, it's raised nearly $24 million, a combination of one-time casino licensing fees and a tax on gambling. And as new casinos open, an analysis by WBUR and The Eye projects the horse fund will grow to more than $20 million a year. But historian Bob Temple says there's little evidence horse racing is making a comeback.
There's big money, and there's really not enough racing to support it. Where does all that money go to? Who's coming out ahead?
To find out, let's follow the money. The sound of 1,200 slot machines at Plain Ridge Park Casino is music to the ears of Penn National Gaming. The company owns and operates the state's only slot parlor. It's in Plainville, about an hour south of Boston. In its first year of operation, bettors dropped nearly $2 billion into the machines. Most of the money wagered, 92%, goes back to bettors as winnings. But the biggest winner is the Commonwealth. The state is guaranteed almost half the money after Penn National pays off slot players. Most of Massachusetts' share goes to local aid, but 18% of the gambling tax goes directly to the horse fund. In the year the slots have been up and running, the horse fund has already taken in $15 million. At Plain Ridge Park, what goes around comes around. Money down the slot machines comes around the racetrack attached to the casino.
$2 on number five. It's all about Mike.
To win?
Yep. Thank you.
To run the slot parlor, Massachusetts requires Penn National to run live racing at Plain Ridge Park. The slot machines at Plain Ridge take in over $5 million a day. In comparison,
the horses are approaching. Bell starting gate.
The money bet on live racing here is chump change.
Roughly, we're handling between 15 and 19,000 in-house a day.
Jason Savastano oversees the Plain Ridge track betting windows. It's here you can see the racehorse subsidy in action.
This field is in motion.
Most of the money from the slots that goes into the horse development fund is used to beef up purses. That's the prize money paid to owners of winning horses. The crowd outside on the rail, watching the horses trot by, is sparse, even today, Free Hat Day. There's no admission charge. Attendance isn't even counted. In fact, there are more people inside the clubhouse watching simulcast racing on screens than watching the real action just outside.
Everybody's pacers all in behind the gate.
Mutual manager Jason Savastano says you can bet on races broadcast from around the country.
That can get us around another 150,000 on top of that as well, because that's so many more tracks combined.
These days, you don't even have to go to the track to watch races and bet. You can use an app on your smartphone. But there are some, mostly an older crowd, who still like to see the action live.
My name's Ed Nowak. I'm retired. And, I have a horse in this race, and I have another horse that races here.
What are the odds? By pure chance, right next to me was the president of the Standardbred Owners of Massachusetts.
Which horse do you have in here?
The six horse, 16-1, called Native Speed.
Nowak's horse is the long shot. My bet, All About Mike, is the 2-1 favorite. Slot machines are pure luck, but picking a winning horse, factoring in past performances, track conditions, and considering the odds, that takes some skill. These are harness race horses, pacers and trotters, not thoroughbreds you see in the Kentucky Derby. In harness racing, drivers ride in small buggies called sulkies. As they round the track, the standardbreds look delicate. But these are powerful, 1,000-pound trained athletes that can thunder through a mile in under 2 minutes.
That was your horse.
Yes, it was. See, anybody can win at this game. You should buy a horse.
Ed Nowak can laugh now. Thanks to the fund, it's been a good payday at the races. His horse finished first and receives half the $3,700 purse, adding to Native Speed's six-year total.
He's won $72,000 since I bought him.
And how much you pay for this horse?
$5,500, so it's cost me $25,000 or $30,000 to keep him. So, yeah, I've made some money.
But Nowak is lucky. Horse racing is a risky business. Costs are high, margins thin, and profits uncertain. And until the Racehorse Development Fund kicked in a year ago, Massachusetts racing industry was on its last legs. The prize money paid by the track, pathetic.
I raced for an overall purse of $1,800.
Horse owner Bob Bogigan.
I won that race and I cleared $800 for my share. I didn't even cover expenses. We were finished.
But thanks to the infusion of $8 million from the casino tax subsidy this year, the standardbred side of the racing industry is stabilizing.
The Horsemen's Development Fund, it's worked out very well. And right now we're in a good place where we're going to get higher purses. And it will stimulate the entire live product.
But that's only because standardbred owners have a track where they can routinely compete for purses made fatter by the horse fund. Plain Ridge Casino is required to hold 115 days of racing this year and more next year. Thoroughbred horse owners are a distant second. Since Suffolk Downs Racetrack lost its bid for a casino 2 years ago, there have been only 9 days of racing scheduled there. So far, the only thing that's been saving thoroughbreds in Massachusetts is that they were getting 3/4 of the purse money from the state fund. The cut for standardbreds, those running at Plain Ridge, just 25%. The unequal split has bred contempt between the two groups of horse breeders and owners. About a month ago, the two sides went head-to-head before the state horse racing committee, which voted to dramatically change the split in favor of standardbreds, reducing the thoroughbred share of the fund from 75% to 45%. Frank Frizzoli represents the thoroughbred horse owners.
We were very disappointed with the vote here. I thought it might be appropriate to slightly reduce the percentage that went to the thoroughbred allocation, and I just think the committee went too far.
The decision was yet another setback for the state's thoroughbred racehorse industry, which is still looking for a permanent place to run. And even though not many fans show up at Plain Ridge Park, standardbreds have a track of their own, and harness racehorse owners will get millions of dollars more from the new split of the Racehorse Development Fund. Massachusetts Gaming Commissioner Stephen Crosby.
There is anecdotal evidence that the Racehorse Development Fund is having a positive impact on the harness racing side. The thoroughbred racing side is completely in chaos, you know, because nobody knows what's going to happen.
Tomorrow, chaos leads to infighting and a federal lawsuit as thoroughbred horse owners offer competing visions of a long-shot future. For 90.9 WBUR and Bostonomics, I'm Bruce Gelderman.
Our series, Trying to Win, But No Place to Show, is produced in collaboration with the investigative news organization, The Eye. Find our series at WBUR.org. Some New Englanders put a lifetime of training on display today in Rio de Janeiro. No, they're not Olympic athletes. They're fashion designers preparing to send a Brazilian model down a runway in front of the international crowd gathered in Rio. From the New England News Collaborative, reporter Emily Corwin has the story.
It was just a few months ago, really, that a San Francisco fashion show producer told a Brazilian fashion show producer to check out some colorful dresses made in an unlikely place, New Hampshire. That's when Laura McCarthy and her collaborator, Harry Heumann, got the invitation to show their new collection on the Teatro Fashion Mall runway in Rio on day 4 of the Summer Olympics. Lately, McCarthy says she's been pulling 12-hour days.
This whole week has been stressful because I've been sewing nonstop, and I'm really ready to stop and just get on the plane and go.
Laughing in the background is Haley Bonzar, a local model. She won't be on the runway in Rio, but she is helping McCarthy fit clothes here in New Hampshire. McCarthy manages to talk to me while holding pins in her mouth and putting them in and out of a dress, which is draped on Bonzar.
This is something that I sort of put together piece by piece on the dress form and was, I take a sort of a sculptural approach to things.
McCarthy's work fits in an unusual space in fashion. She's not chasing anything. Not celebrity, not money, not big museum exhibitions.
For me, I've been sort of reluctant to be part of the business end of things. I've had my own line, but it's more out of my own interest in designing and expressing my own ideas, and I'm really bad at self-promotion.
See, McCarthy started making her own clothes in high school in the town next door to where she lives now. She went to the celebrated Rhode Island School of Design, RISD, to study textiles. And now she teaches fashion at a small college near Boston. It's her collaborator on this project, Harry Heumann, who seems hungry for redder carpets and brighter lights.
They expect 500,000 people to come to these games. And I would venture to say that most of the people that attend Olympics have discretionary income, tend to be interested in fashion, experimental fashion, high fashion.
This fashion show is not officially part of the Olympics, but the promise to an Olympic Games host country is innumerable tourists with deep pocketbooks. Hotels, shops, restaurants, performers, and yes, even fashion designers are eager to capitalize on all the action. Heumann hopes this trip to Rio can help him and McCarthy launch their collaboration as a commercial line of clothing. The way it works is Heumann designs the prints and orders the fabric. McCarthy designs and sews the clothes. For the dress getting fitted on the model right now, the pattern on the fabric comes from a still-life photograph Heumann took. He points to some thick white lines.
These are Venetian blinds, and they are then somewhat, but not a whole lot, post-processed on the computer.
A single orange strap holds the dress up on the model's left shoulder. Colorful oranges and yellows bunch around some black lace at her rib cage. As McCarthy makes adjustments, Heumann bustles into the living room with an armload of fabric.
This is neoprene that Laura is seeing for the first time. And this is something that she specifically asked for because of the way it drapes. And we have in mind here a jacket design. Am I right? It's going to go with that?
They have one day before leaving for Rio, and new fabric is still arriving. McCarthy seems relieved that I've turned my attention to Heumann. But soon, the sound of a steam iron interrupts us. McCarthy is pressing a Lycra swimsuit piece. In a moment, she's sitting down, threading up her sewing machine. All told, she and Yuman are bringing 13 looks, or outfits with accessories, to Rio. It's an almost Olympic sprint to the finish. For the New England News Collaborative, I'm Emily Corwin in Concord.